Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, bringing you this week's episode of Sherlock Holmes. If you've got any comments, please feel free to email me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Please cast your vote over at Podcast Alley, podcastalley.greatdetectives.net. And thanks to everyone who has filled out our listener survey. If you've not already, please fill it out, survey.greatdetectives.net. Speaking of Podcast Alley, we've got a very good comment that segues into our show. Great podcast, great pre-show commentary, and we need more Sherlock Holmes. Well, we definitely will definitely have Sherlock Holmes when we get the video up. We'll be including some Sherlock Holmes in the video extras that that we do. One thing I would definitely agree on is we need more of the Basil Rathbone, Nigel Bruce episodes that are out there. Sadly, as I've mentioned, a lot of them got lost to the war, which is quite a shame because they did almost the entire Sherlock Holmes canon. We are missing so many of those episodes. The episodes we'll play the next couple of weeks, they're not necessarily in the greatest of shape, but they are extremely, incredibly rare episodes that I trust you're going to enjoy. Now, we should mention, we talk about the Basil Rathbone, Nigel Bruce, Sherlock Holmes show as if it was just, you know, one show, one continuous show running from 1939 to 46. Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. It actually, of course, it began on the Blue Network in 1939, and it aired 39 to 40, and 40 to 41, and 41 to 42. And these were fairly short seasons. Over those three seasons, they did a grand total of just about 70 plus episodes. So this was almost like a modern TV season. And when they were doing the radio show originally, they weren't constantly doing Sherlock Holmes movies at the same time. Rathbone and Bruce made two Sherlock Holmes movies that appeared in 1939, The Hound of the Baskervilles and The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. In 42, they began ramping up production of the remaining 12 Sherlock Holmes movies. So I would think it would be fair to speculate that that's part of the reason why the radio show, it disappeared from the air for quite some time. It left the Blue Network in March of 1942 and didn't return for 14 months, and this time it was on a different network. And this part of this may have been the war, and we've talked about the general mood towards Sherlock Holmes as being something that was necessary. And so Rathbone and Bruce returned. However, these after their first season, this was something where they were doing heavy-duty extras. They weren't taking summers off from doing Sherlock Holmes shows. So basically, at the same time that they were doing 12 Sherlock Holmes movies over 4 years, they were doing the every single week a new Sherlock Holmes episode, all the way through 1945, when right after the war, they did take a pause for summer. And the sad thing is there are very few of these episodes in existence. And I think part, you know, I think that There was definitely a very strong feeling that went behind that. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we get back. This one is actually an Armed Forces Radio Services edition of Sherlock Holmes. This one comes from the middle of the run. This comes from May of 1944. This one is not, and you know, I've been wrong before on this, but I double check, and this does not appear to be in the Sherlock Holmes canon. It's The Adventure of the Missing Bloodstains. Before we get started, I just want to remind you, a great deduction to make is that there are a lot of people saving money on airlines and making their travel plans for the new year. Where are they saving their money? A lot of people are saving money over at Priceline.com. Well, follow the clues and remember to fly Johnny Dollar Air. That's JohnnyDollarAir.com. That's our affiliate link for Priceline.com. And when you book a flight on Priceline or a hotel ticket or a cruise, you not only get a great deal, but you also help support the great detectives of old time radio. Well, without any further ado, let's get into the missing bloodstains.
Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
This rebroadcast is especially for the American Armed Forces and their allies. Now let's join Dr. Campbell as he enters Dr. Watson's study. Here we are once again in Dr. Watson's study.
Come in, Mr. Campbell. Come in. Here, sit down and relax. You look a bit wilted, old fella.
Oh, yes, it's such a beautiful spring evening. I thought I'd walk over. In fact, it's so beautiful I dawdled most of the way, drinking in the warm air and the smell of things growing until suddenly I realized I was blame well going to be late if I didn't hurry. So I ran the last 3 blocks.
Yes, I know how it is. This lovely spring weather is certainly conducive to indolence. My household claim that when I go out to do the spring planting, I spend most of my time leaning on the spade, sniffing, and listening to the birds. Not an unpleasant way to pass the time of day, incidentally. Yes, a day like today is almost as relaxing as a Turkish bath. Which reminds me of a curious and gory experience that Holmes and I had in just such an establishment some years ago.
It sounds suspiciously like the gentleman who said bang. Oh, speaking of explosions.
Now, Mr. Campbell, you must never complain about the way that a storyteller begins his yarn. Anything is better than an abrupt beginning. Now, put me all out. Where was I?
In a Turkish bath, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yes, a Turkish bath. You are not mistaken. Yes, that's it. Well, now, to begin at the beginning, it was in the hectic, hair-raising, and I might even say the glorious day of the great battle of wits between Sherlock Holmes and the notorious Professor Moriarty.
What you might call a real battle of the titans, eh, Doctor?
Indeed it was, Mr. Campbell. Things had been unusually hectic for Holmes for several months. Moriarty had been particularly active, and Holmes had had many sleepless nights. Finally, things had calmed down a bit, and I tried to persuade him to take a badly needed holiday. The net result being that he finally did agree to have an afternoon off and accompany me to a Turkish bath. As a matter of fact, both Holmes and I had a weakness for the Turkish bath. Over a smoke, in the pleasant latitude of the drying room, I've often found him less reticent and more human than at any other time.
The heat melted his cast iron reserve, eh, Dr. Watson?
Oh, only slightly, Mr. Campbell, only slightly. Well, as I was saying, on the upper floor of a certain Northumberland Avenue establishment, there is an isolated corner where two couches lie side by side. And it was on these that we were lying. Holmes had just shot his long, sinewy arm out of the towels which enveloped him and was fishing about in the inside pocket of his coat, which hung beside him.
Where have I put it?
Where on earth did I put it? Oh, confound the thing. Watson.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot to bring my tobacco.
Oh, relax, Holmes. Just relax. Forget about tobacco. Forget Moriarty and relax. That's what we came in here for.
Burble, 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 burble. I am relaxed, my dear fellow. I want to smoke.
What about the burble, burble? Nothing like the peace and seclusion of a Turkish bar.
Mr. Holmes. Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Hello? Gus, the steam room attendant seems to be paging you.
Oh, my goodness. Now what?
Has anyone seen Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Why,
here I am, Gus. Here I am. What do you want? Oh, come on.
Oh, Mr. Holmes. It's good I find you. There has been an accident, Mr. Holmes. A bad accident. It's Lord Canterbury. He's in his dressing room, covered with blood.
Oh. In that case, I fancy you want Dr. Watson, don't you? Not me.
I'll be with you in a minute, Gus.
Oh, no, not Dr. Watson. It's too late for you. He's dead.
Dead?
Stabbed in six places. Come and look at him, Mr. Holmes, please.
Dead? Hear me. All right. I'll come at once.
Good gracious me. What's all the commotion? Why can't we have a little peace and quiet around? What's the meaning of this, Gus? Why are these two persons talking at the top of their voices?
My dear whoever you are, I was never under the impression that the Olympia Baths were a church. Furthermore, my dear Mr. Never mind the name.
Tunbridge. Frederick Gilbert Tunbridge, a liberal leader in the present parliament, which everyone knows and keeps abreast of the time.
My dear Mr. Tunbridge, I do not concern myself with trivialities. Furthermore, as I was saying before being so rudely interrupted, you may be interested to know that your hated rival, Lord Canterbury, the Conservative leader with whom you are known to have publicly locked horns on several occasions.
What's he done now, the old fool?
If you mean Lord Canterbury, he's done absolutely... Yes, he hasn't done anything, and probably never will again.
Oh, what are you blithering about?
Well, it seems that Gus has just discovered your, shall we say, political vis-a-vis, dead in his dressing room.
Oh, you mean he's had a heart attack?
No, I don't mean anything of the kind. He's been stabbed. In how many places did you say, Gus?
In six places, Mr. Holmes.
But that's impossible. I talked to him not half an hour ago. We had a little conference, sub rosa, you understand? While he was waiting for Gus to come in and give him his batter. Well, he was quite all right when I left him.
Oh, really? Are you sure?
What do you mean? Of course I'm sure. Canterbury was alive and cursing like a trooper when I left him. I passed Gus in the corridor as I came out of Canterbury's dressing room. He'll tell you the old boy was alive and kicking.
Oh, will he? How about it, Gus?
It is true I hear swearing, but from which dressing room it comes I could not be sure. The walls are so thin, you understand.
Yes, yes, indeed. It's quite true the dressing room walls are thin.
Gus, who is this person and why is he asking all these stupid questions?
But Mr. Turnbridge, this gentleman is Mr. Sherlock Holmes, the famous detective.
I've never heard of him.
Not even with you there, Holmes.
Well, send for Scotland Yard. This is a matter of national importance.
Quite, yes. I think you're quite right. You may as well send for Inspector Lestrade, Gus. Scotland Yard will have to be informed in any case. In the meantime, however, I think I'll take a look.
Well, in the meantime, Mr. Whoever you are, I insist that everything be left strictly alone.
Very well, then, Mr. Thingamabob, if you insist, but you'll be losing valuable time.
I most emphatically do insist.
Well, I'm getting out of here.
Beat you, I'd like to report.
You can do without me.
Just a moment, gentlemen. Just a moment, if you please. I think it's only fair to point out to you all that suspicion is bound to fall on anyone who leaves before the authorities have had a chance to search and question him.
Touch me? Oh. You mean I have to be searched?
We seem to have stirred up quite a hornet's nest, eh, Watson?
Yes, and I brought you in here for a rest.
Well, Lestrade?
Nasty mess, eh, Mr. Holmes? Knife from the back.
Yes, not once, but six times. Deep, ferocious thrusts. Quite unnecessarily brutal. And, if I may say so, bloody.
Yeah. Place looks like a charnel house.
Yes, whoever did the deed must have been drenched in blood.
Mm.
Might tell your men to search for bloodstained towels or garments, will you, Lestrade?
Yes. Well, I'll pick up anything that's got blood on it. Never you fear, Mr. Holmes. I've ordered a search of everybody and everything on the premises.
Yes, that's not going to be very popular with Mr. Tunbridge, eh, Holmes?
Oh, I wouldn't care if he was the Archbishop of Canterbury. When Scotland Yard says search everybody, we search everybody. Besides, everybody knows he and the corpse here are bitter enemies. They fought like cat and dog. How long would you say he'd been dead, Mr. Elms?
Oh, I don't know. About an hour and a half. Took 30, 40 minutes to get you here, Lestrade.
Mm.
And Canterbury had been dead, let me see, over half an hour when Gus found him.
Yes. Did the doorman notice who left the establishment during the half hour before the body was found?
Yes, sir. Only old Mr. Welford. And he's too feeble and excited to do a crime like this.
Mm-hmm. Was the door to Lord Canterbury's dressing room locked?
No, sir.
Huh? And how does it happen that he lay here for over half an hour before anyone found him?
Particularly as he was down on the books for a massage half an hour before he was found.
Well, you see, I thought he was asleep, Lord Canterbury. Sometimes he liked a little nap after he was in the steam room, and he didn't want I should disturb him.
Oh, that's very interesting. Then you did come in this room once before you realized Lord Canterbury was dead.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. But he was lying there so peaceful.
So peaceful, yes. On his back?
Yes, sir. Just like we found him. It wasn't until the second time I come in I see he has his eyes open.
Mm-hmm. And the place is, shall we say, all spattered with blood?
It was so dark. The shades were drawn. It was not easy to see anything if you don't look close.
Even then, some people are unable to observe the most obvious facts.
And what might you mean by that?
Oh, just an observation, Lestrade. Just a gratuitous observation.
Come in. Well, Willis, what's up?
We've wiped the place from top to bottom, just like you said, Inspector. And there's no bloodstains nowhere, except on this.
And what's that?
A pocket knife, sir. Large size.
Oh.
The handle's been wiped off, but there's still some bloodstains on the blade. We found it in the locker of a bloke, name of Tunbridge.
Uh-huh.
Just a minute, Lestrade. Don't go off the deep end. Willis.
Yes, sir?
You say there were no bloodstains anywhere except on this knife.
Not a sign of a bloodstain nowhere.
You searched the dirty linen hampers, the towels and lockers, where the customers had their clothes?
Oh, yes, sir. We searched everything. There's not a sign of blood anywhere but on that there weapon.
Amazing.
That's enough for me. This here is the murder weapon, and it was found in Tunbridge's locker. Bring him in here, Willis, and we'll have him on the carpet.
Yes, sir. Right away.
I knew he was a murderer from the beginning. Who has the motive for killing Canterbury? This chap Tunbridge. Who had the opportunity? This chap Tunbridge. He admits himself he had a talk with the deceased and they had words. Where is this here bloodstained knife found? Nowhere but in the this Mr. Tunbridge's locker.
Stupid place for a murderer to hide the fatal weapon in his own locker. Tunbridge isn't as stupid as that, Lestrade.
No. And why was it there?
Look here, this is an outrage, keeping me here like this. Well, don't you realize I have influence? Well, you might at least let me put on my clothes instead of pawing them about. I'll complain to the authorities. I'll have you dismissed, all of you.
Oh, maybe you will, sir. And then again, maybe you won't. But first of all, you'll answer some questions. Have you ever seen this knife before?
Knife? Yes, of course. It's mine. I've had it all my life. I used to take it fishing when I was a boy.
Oh, indeed. That would explain its size, then.
Now I use it to open my letters.
Oh, you do? Are you sure that's all you use it for?
Yes, of course.
And why are these here bloodstains on it?
Bloodstains?
Yeah.
Where?
Here and here. No, don't you touch it. We don't want to destroy any possible fingerprints.
But if it's mine, my fingerprints are already on it.
Yes, he's right there, Lestrade.
Oh.
Furthermore, that stain doesn't look like blood to me. It's not red enough. It looks like rust.
As a matter of fact, if the stain is a nice blood red, it's fairly certain it's not blood. Now, this particular stain...
You leave this particular stain to Scotland Yard, Mr.
Yes. Don't forget, my dear Lestrade, I invented the first infallible test for blood stains.
That's quite true, Lestrade. You did.
Yes, indeed. My test is infallible. It works on blood that is new or on blood that is old. I discovered the first reagent, which is precipitated by hemoglobin.
Sorry, but Scotland Yard hasn't any time for lectures. We believe in action. Now, Mr. Tunbridge, It's my duty to take you into custody, but it's also my duty to warn you that anything that you may say may be used in evidence against you.
Anything I say? Do you realize whom you're arresting? I'm a leading figure in British politics.
So was this fellow who lies here stabbed with your knife, which has still got bloodstains on it.
Lestrade, if you'll pardon me for saying so, in this case, it's not the bloodstains that are in evidence, but the bloodstains that are not in evidence, which is the significant factor.
What do you mean by that?
Simply that it would have been rather difficult for Mr. Tunbridge to have committed a murder as gory as this one without having bloodstains on the towel he's wearing or on the clothes, which are still in his locker.
What was to prevent him from dropping his towel outside Lord Canterbury's dressing room, going in and knifing him in the back, then sneaking down to the shower rooms, not more than 20 feet down the corridor, and washing away the evidence?
Me going round about in the nude? Certainly not.
Most certainly not, sir. Remember, my dear Lestrade, as you drag one of Britain's leaders away to jail, that it might have been possible for him to stab his enemy in a fit of temper, but he would never have dreamed of running up and down the corridors in his birthday suit. Let me see. I'm afraid I shall have to look for another explanation of the missing bloodstains.
Holmes, it's very late. Everyone else has left the Turkish bar.
Everyone but the faithful Gus.
Oh, I don't mind. Tonight we have by my house sauerkraut.
I don't like sauerkraut.
Besides, I've got to stay and lock up.
Then you'll have to wait till we find the bloodstains. Here somewhere. That's why I sent home for my famous benzidine peroxide mixture. Somewhere on the premises, there is a towel or linen or something that has bloodstains.
Oh, but we've been through the towels and the linen a dozen times, Holmes. No sign of blood. Furthermore, according to the establishment's checklist, there are no towels or any linen missing. Even Gus, which he washes himself, is hung here on the line.
You don't wash any linen but your own, do you, Gus?
No, Mr. Holmes. Everything go out to the laundry. Mm-hmm. I wash my own because I'd like to be fresh and clean. Twice a day I wash, noon and evening.
Mm. Yes. The evening's job hasn't been done yet, eh?
No. This one I washed this noon. It's my towel from this morning.
Oh, yes. This morning's towel washed this noon. Yes. What was it? Canterbury was murdered in the middle of the afternoon about 3:30. Now it's now after 7 o'clock. Don't you see, Watson? This towel. Don't you see?
No, Holmes, I don't. Makes a blasted thing. The towel's as clean as a whistle.
But not dry. If it had been washed at noon, it would be dry now. But it's still damp. Yes, it was washed after Canterbury's death.
Of course, to remove the bloodstains.
Gus?
Mr. Holmes.
That's why you didn't report the death until half an hour after Canterbury had died.
Oh, no.
You had to have time to remove the bloodstains.
But that's not true. Besides, you can't prove anything. The towel is clean now. There are no marks, no stains.
The very fact that there were no stains on it, Gus, first made me suspect you. Lord Canterbury was found lying on his back. And yet, when you informed us that he had been stabbed, you were quite definite about the number of times that he'd been stabbed.
But in the back.
Yes? Yes. How did you know that, Gus?
Well, I lift him up and I look.
Of course, I see what you're getting at, Holmes. He couldn't have done that. No one could examine the corpse without getting blood all over himself.
And yet, when Gus appeared to tell us of Canterbury's death, there wasn't a spot of blood on him. But if I can prove that this towel which you so carefully washed once had bloodstains and that you were very careful to remove those stains...
That you will never prove. I have scrubbed. I have used soap. I have even boiled that towel. There is not even a suspicion of a bloodstain left.
That is why you're wrong, my friend. Watson, run the water into this tub, will you? No matter how thoroughly you try to remove a bloodstain, it will never... out. Damn it, spot. Yes, we only need enough to moisten the cloth. Now I'll drop a few drops of my famous solution onto the cloth. There we are.
Well, all I can see is a lot of pale blue streaks.
Yes, it's undoubtedly blood.
Blood?
Yes, the curious blue streaks prove infallibly that there was blood on this towel. And now, Gus, are you going to explain why you were so anxious to remove these bloodstains?
No, I did not do it. It was Mr. Tunbridge. He did it. The knife was his knife. There was blood on it. Let me out of here. It's not my fault. I don't want to hurt.
Holmes, he's running away.
Him, Watson. You can't get him escape.
Well, there he goes down the corridor.
He's gone into the steamboat.
Don't worry. I'll get him. Phew. The steam's thick in here. I can hardly see my hand before my face.
Must be in here. Look under the benches, Watson. Watson, leave the door open. Let some of this blasted steam out of here, will you?
I didn't shut the door. Holmes, you hear that?
The door. Someone's locked the door.
Hey, somebody, let us out. Let us out, you hear? We're locked in. We've been locked in by mistake.
No, you're wrong. It was no mistake, my friend.
Holmes, where are you? We hear the steamer with us.
No, that's just the voice through the ventilator.
So you were behind this murder too, Professor?
Of course. Perhaps you would like to know why I had to kill Lord Canterbury.
Yes, indeed. That would be very interesting.
Good. I found it necessary to start a feud between the two great political parties because they're in danger of forming a coalition to pass certain housing reforms that would have proved very expensive to me. Well, what better way to break up an incipient collaboration than by killing one leader, having the other hanged for his murder?
Very ingenious, Moriarty. A pity you should have chosen such a clumsy tool as Gus.
Clumsy? Perhaps. But he fooled Scotland Yard, Mr. Holt. It was just my ill luck that you should be on the premises when the accident occurred. Oh,
thank you for the compliment.
Not at all. However, it's a mistake which I'm sure Gus will be able to rectify.
Gus? How?
Very simple. I've sent him to put more coals on the fire. Any moment now, there should be more steam. Yes, gentlemen, much more steam. I'm afraid that when you finish with this steam bath, you will never need another. No. You will be boiled alive.
He's right there. There comes the steam pouring out of the opening over our heads. If only we could reach that opening, we could stuff some of these towers into the pipeline and cut off the flow.
Good Lord, Holmes, it's getting very hot in here.
Wait. I have it. One of the long benches. I'll stand on the end. You have to balance it while I climb on the top. Talk, Watson, make a noise. Anything to cover up the moving of the bench.
Oh, really well. Oh, it's getting hot. Moriarty, this has gone far enough. We can't stand much more of this.
Steady, Holmes. I'll hand me up a towel, quick.
Moriarty, turn the steam off. You hear, Moriarty, can't you hear? The heat, it's becoming unbearable.
Yes, more towels, Holmes.
Is it getting hot enough in there, gentlemen Boyle? I'm sure it is. Boiled nice and pink, boiled in steam, live steam. Goodbye, Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Now what happened? You can't stand up there all night, Holmes.
Someone has to. Pressure's terrific.
Huh?
Very lucky. The sun will come so great that it may burst the boiler.
But that's dangerous. Buildings will be known to collapse because of bursting boilers.
Nevertheless, it's our one chance. Only the confounded boiler bursts before my arm is snapped in two.
Holmes, your arm isn't as strong as the boiler plate.
Pressure, my dear Watson. Measured per square foot of air surface. Quite a bit of surface to a boiler. The opening of this pipe is fairly small. All the same, I'm afraid I can't hold out much longer, Watson.
Hold on, Holmes. Hold on. It must burst soon. It must.
The pressure. My hands. My hands.
Look out. Look out. Look out.
And you came through the explosion all right, Dr. Watson?
Well, I had a nasty crack where Holmes and the bench fell on me, and Holmes had the wind knocked out of him, but we were in fairly good shape by the time the fire brigade pulled us out from the wreckage.
Moriarty wasn't by any chance trapped or killed or something?
Unfortunately, no. But they found Gus, however, quite dead.
I suppose the exploding boiler did for him.
No, there was a bullet wound in the back of his head. I rather imagine that Moriarty wanted to make sure that he would never appear in court.
Doctor, if I had to go through what you went through in that Turkish bath episode, I think I'd never want to work on another case with Holmes again.
Oh, come now, Mr. Gamble. I certainly did feel like that for a couple of hours. But by the time we got back to Baker Street and sat down to one of Mrs. Hudson's good meals, well, I was ready for anything that Holmes had in mind. You know, there's nothing like a good dinner to make you feel a new man.
You have been listening to An Adventure in Crime with Basil Rathbone as Sherlock Holmes and Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson.
Welcome back. Well, this is the first time we have heard the appearance of Professor Moriarty in the Rathbone Bruce version. And the role of Professor Moriarty was actually played by Lewis Hector, who you'll recall was one of the early Sherlock Holmes we heard. In one way, it really, having Moriarty as somebody you can pull out of a hat, it really is a great way to be able to raise the level of the story. Rather than having Sherlock Holmes just defeat the common crooks, the presence of Moriarty as someone who can just turn up and really provide a rival to Holmes was a big mainstay, not only of the radio show, but also of several of the Sherlock Holmes movies. Of course, Moriarty wasn't in that many of the original stories, but there was really, I think, a desire here to increase some of the excitement after so many episodes. The announcer at the beginning of the show, I have to be honest, I don't quite know who he is. The information I have, it mentions Knox Manning, who we've heard, and he did the bromoquinone, and Harry Bartell, who would take over in the 1945-46 series, but not a whole lot about this Mr. Campbell. So if you happen to have any information about him, please send it to box13@greatdetectives.net. Of course, this was an Armed Forces Radio Services presentation of Sherlock Holmes, so no Petri Wine commercials. Did get one more comment we're going to share, and then we will wrap the show up. Michael Galea, a longtime listener, comments over on the show site at greatdetectives.net. I remember my father telling me he had the chance to see Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce do a Sherlock Holmes story live while he was in the Army during World War II. My dad was in Southern California getting ready to ship out. Mr. Rathbone and Mr. Bruce provided my dad and the other troops with a great night of entertainment. It's sad that I did not have the chance to thank Mr. Rathbone and Mr. Bruce for that night. Great podcast, thank you. You know, there were so many actors that did so much during the war. And I think, obviously, Basil Rathbone wasn't staying on the air doing Sherlock Holmes for the money, because as soon as, you know, a year after the war was over, we talked about that, kind of just got tired of the show. But even beyond that, it seems like when you listen to these World War II era radio shows, that everything seemed to have taken on an elevated state, even the business of entertainment. So much was done for the troops to provide them with materials and with radio, and you know, on occasion some movies. It was providing just those little bits of comfort and distraction from all that was going on in the world. And sometimes I think that entertainers lose track of that they really, or of the sense that they're there, that their job is ultimately to provide a service to people. And I think that that understanding was really strong during World War II. And as you listen to the Rathbone Bruce episodes, particularly Nigel Bruce, you hear a lot in the after-show comments, a lot of stuff about the war. So it's very timely, and I think I really continue to enjoy every episode we do with these guys. All right, well, we're going to wrap it up. You got any comments, please send it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Please cast your vote on Podcast Alley. Thanks so much for all your support this month. PodcastAlley.GreatDetectives.net. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.
Hello everyone, my name is Andrew Ryans, I'm the host of the Old Time Radio Daily Westerns. I'm inviting you to check out my podcast, it's a daily show about Old Time Radio Westerns, which include The Lone Ranger, Cisco Kid, Tales of the Texas Ranger, Gunsmoke, Challenge of the Yukon, and many more. Go to our show notes site, otrwesterns.com, that's otrwesterns with an S, .com, or search in iTunes for Old Time Radio Daily Westerns. Thanks, and hope you enjoy.